You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Terracina.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Very big now, so yeah, I don't know if it's possible, but I want to at least try it, and then I can at least not blame myself for not trying.
We'll we know see. You're a fighter.
I don't know, but I want to try, yeah.
That was Tom Dumoulin, the 2017 Giro d'Italia champion, last year's runner-up, this morning in Frascati, saying he would give it a go after the crash that he had yesterday, left him with a pretty bad knee. He made it through the neutralised section and around 2 kilometres of the stage five of the Giro, before calling it a day. And Tom Dumoulin is out of the Giro, Daniel.
Sad news, isn't it, Napalm?
It is.
Bad for the race.
Yeah, it is. It robs the race, the GC race, of one of its key elements, doesn't it?
And one of its most appealing characters as well.
Indeed. We are in a very, very wet Terracina today. My name's Lionel Burney. I'm with Daniel Freeb. Well, we're not going to dry out stood here, are we? We're soggy all the way through.
Grim, cold, Terracina. Lionel, teams used to come here in the late 90s, early noughties on their winter training camps because the weather was so good.
Is that right? Well, it's been an uncharacteristically drizzly grey, and today, absolutely sodden
freezing
start to
cold.
The Giro.
I put it to one of our Dutch colleagues, Leon de Court, earlier, that this is the nastiest start to a Grand Tour that I remember in terms of weather. He said the 96 Tour was worse.
That started in the Netherlands, didn't it? Sertogenbosch, and then made its way across.
Yeah, Leon thought there were about 10 days of bad weather then.
Right. That's before I was covering the Tour de France. I was watching on TV and the weather didn't affect me because I was indoors at home. I'm in danger of getting trench foot or something, or I mean, you know, just didn't pack for this weather at all. Fortunately, I'm going home for a couple of days at the weekend. I'm going to pay a lot more attention to the weather forecast. But really, no one's tuning in to hear us grizzling and griping about the weather. It was the riders who had to suffer it. 140 kilometres they had to cover. So 3 hours and a bit they were out in it. Not a pleasant day for them.
3 hours in a bit? Is that all?
Yeah, well, let's have a look. It was...
surely not.
3 hours, 15 minutes.
So oh, right.
44 seconds they were out there. Yeah, they weren't slow. I mean, but they weren't racing full bore either, were they? Because the big concern on a day like this is the chance of crashes. And we saw at the finish, as they came into Terracina, what should have been a kind of nice 7K lap of the town was pretty much neutralised. The organisers announced midway through the stage, or very early in the stage, that the times for the general classification would be taken as they came across the finish line into the town. And then really that boiled the sprint down only to people who wanted to take the risk with the potential reward of a stage win. So 140 kilometres, stage five. What happened? Well, there was the customary breakaway. It went after just 2 kilometres. It had two riders from Bardiani in it, Enrico Barbin and Umberto Orsini. The other wildcard teams were represented. Androni's Miguel Angel Flores was in there. Ivan Santaromita of Nippo Vinifantini was in there. Luis Vivecca of Team Sunweb was also in there, because Sunweb have lost their leader, their talisman, Tom Dumoulin. Briefly, the King of the Mountains, Giulio Ciccone of Trek, was in there, but he sat up after a few kilometres and left them to it. They stayed away quite a lot of the day. Vivek was the last man out on his own. He got clear on his own on a small climb, but he was caught after 117 kilometres. And then we had a sprint finish. And, well, it was a peculiar one, really, wasn't it? Because there was some pretty nervous cornering. There wasn't really the opportunity for lead-out trains to get into full flow. And because the lead-out and the pace generally was a little bit lower than we'd normally expect in a sprint finish, it was quite a difficult one to call. It was one of those ones where you'd think that the smaller guys with the greatest acceleration might get across the line first. So my thought was Caleb Ewan. This might be the day for Ewan. But it was actually Pascal Ackermann of Bora Hansgrohe, his second stage win of this Giro. Very close, though. He came off Fernando Gaviria's wheel and got him on the line. Arnaud Démare was third. Ewan fourth. Elia Viviani, the Italian champion, was further back. They made the decision, De Koenig Quickstep, to come up late into the mix at the front. He came with a couple of teammates, but as soon as he got into the position to contest the sprint, he kind of stalled, and the two teammates that had been with him, well, they seemed to think their job was done, because they kind of just evaporated. So a second stage win for Ackermann, and he's looking pretty good, isn't he?
Well, he is, Napalm, but this Giro, well, we thought that it was going to mark the, well, it was going to be a bit of a Royal Rumble of new sprinting talent, and we thought that this would really help us to understand what the pecking order now is in world sprinting. A lot of good sprinters here, a lot of opportunities for them, but it's felt bitty so far. We said that there have been mitigating circumstances every day. There have been, you know, today it was the weather, on another day it was Viviani getting disqualified, and that's, I don't know, it doesn't really feel as though they've had a good old kind of drag race with everyone there yet.
No, and we are anticipating a breakaway, perhaps staying away tomorrow to San Giovanni Rotondo, then another couple of kind of breakaway stages before the time trial, so it may well be that the sprinters don't get back into action until these two billiard table flat stages after the rest day next week. We will recap everything that's gone on in today's stage. We'll also talk about some withdrawals beside Tom Dumoulin's, and for an entirely different reason a rider has left the Giro d'Italia this morning. And we'll also get the Dutch perspective on Dumoulin's departure from the race.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons Run.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. The best protection I had from the elements today was my, it's a quite a lightweight Rafa jacket, but kept me warm, and it kept the worst of the rain off. It performed a lot better than I expected. Really, you know, you need proper waterproof for this kind of conditions, and this is just a sort of lightweight post-ride type jacket, but it did its best in really testing conditions
today. I'm soaking. I'm freezing.
Well, where was your Rafa jacket?
I've been out about three times interviewing various people. Anyway,
well, Rafa are launching their Aero range. There's an Aero jersey for men and women, an Aero suit for men and women, and Pro Team bib shorts, and they are exactly the same as those being worn by the EF Education First riders at this Giro. And if you want to find out more about that range and everything else Rafa do, including the Pedaleur de Charme range for us here on the Cycling Podcast, then go to rafa.cc and keep nominations for Charming Pedaling coming on Twitter, please. We'll be naming our first Pedaleur de Charme of this Giro at the weekend. Now, it's a day for Dutch reflection. Hans Rugenberg of De Telegraaf is here. Hans, what's the immediate reaction, the knee-jerk reaction to Tom Dumoulin's withdrawal from the Giro?
The main media reaction is that a lot of journalists are going home, because we all expected that he would go for the GC, of course, and for the win of the Giro d'Italia. But I heard a lot of the Dutch colleagues, and they said, well, this is for now the end of our Giro d'Italia. Maybe Bauke Mollema has taken over the GC thing, but normally if he doesn't do anything, then I don't think many Dutch journalists will be here anymore.
Hans, your colleague and our friend Leon de Court told me that he'd spoken to Tom in the spring, and he tried to convince Tom Dumoulin that it was a bad idea to go for the Giro, because the team that somewhere were going to bring to the Giro wasn't strong enough. And so Leon, well, he doesn't think it's a good thing that Tom had this crash, but he thinks that the net result will be positive, because now he will focus on the Tour.
You could say that, of course, that that the best thing, well, he had a dilemma, of course, because last year he said, I want to do the Tour de France, and then came the Giro d'Italia parcours, and he saw the 60k of time trials, and then came the dilemma. He talked with the team about it, what to do, and then they said, well, we're gonna do the Giro and then the Tour. But now the dilemma is gone because of the crash, and he can focus on the Tour de France now, and he's a guy who can who don't need really competition to be in good shape for a grand tour. He showed it already before, the years before. So it's a bad that he had a crash, of course, but maybe it's a good thing for him that he now can really focus on only the Tour de France and go for the tour win, because he already won the Giro in 2017, of course.
It was amazing to me that Dumoulin even started today. He said that, you know, he was glad that he couldn't reproach himself for not giving it a try. But when he came out of the Sunweb bus this morning, he was reversing down the steps, wasn't he? A bit like a nervous swimmer lowering themselves into the shallow end of the swimming pool. I mean, he didn't look comfortable just on his feet. The risk that he could come down again and injure himself more and exacerbate the problems he already had were there. I mean, what does it say about his character that he even bothered to cross the start line this morning, probably knowing in his mind that it might only be for a few kilometres?
No, he showed courage. He showed that he's a grand champion, also to the organisation of the Giro d'Italia. I'm not going to quit before trying. That's what he showed today. But he already said in my mind this morning when I went on the bike in the room, already for 99% I knew I wasn't gonna start, but even that 1% I wanted to try to see if I could do it. So he showed everybody that he's not a quitter before trying, and that's, I think, the Tom Dumoulin we saw the last years and also this Giro d'Italia, and we're gonna see for the next years.
And Hans, I think you saw him at the finish, did you?
Yeah, so yeah. The bus before the finish was here. We talked with him at the bus, and he talked about, well, how bad the knee was injured, and still thick, it was swollen still, and he couldn't give even any power on it. We also asked him about the Tour de France, of course, what he thinks about that. But he said to us, "I want to go home now first, and then we have to see at home. We're going to make some extra pictures from the knee, what's really going on in there, how bad the injury is, and then after that I'm going to see what my program will be for the Tour de France, but I'm not really thinking about it now."
And how is Roglic, and obviously Roglic rides for a Dutch team, has he been in any sense adopted by the Dutch public, the Dutch media, as one of their own?
I have to.
You know, he's a former ski jumper. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know. He's, everybody knows. that story comes every year again. But no. Well, he's from Slovenia. He's riding for a Dutch team, but still, he's from Slovenia, and the Dutch people really don't see him as one of the guys that's from us. When with Tom Dumoulin, it's different. Bauke Mollema, if he does something, those guys are Dutch, but he's not a Dutch guy. So no, the people in Holland not really gonna cheer about the win of Roglic of the Giro.
So people in the Netherlands don't support Jumbo Visma like they would support Ajax or PSV Eindhoven or Feyenoord, even, you know, with a foreign rider as a star. It doesn't work like that in the Netherlands.
No, it's not the same. A cycling team or a football team, it's a whole different thing. They really relate to Dutch riders if they have a win. It's a complete different thing. Maybe it's because cycling is traveling around the world, and well, the teams are really playing okay in the Netherlands, of course. So maybe that's also the different thing. They can see the teams in the stadiums and everything. So I think that's also a main thing that's really different.
Are you staying or are you going?
I'm staying till Sunday, but then I'm gonna go home as well. And maybe my colleague is gonna come back if there's something special is gonna happen. And if Roglic really gonna win the Giro, then my colleague maybe is gonna be the last week or the last weekend. So somebody's coming, because it's a Dutch team, of course, Jumbo-Visma. So yeah.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, Race Radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode of our Giro coverage is sponsored by the British Heart Foundation and the London to Brighton Charity Bike Ride, which is in its 44th year this year, and the countdown is on, Rich. We'll be riding from Clapham to Brighton on the 16th of June. You'll have...
As discussed in the second podcast, Fairmount, Rose Manley and I may join you in tooting. because it's, really? It's a bit closer to Brighton.
Oh goodness me! You're
no, we're not going to do that.
But you are making you will be making a dash back from the women's tour in Wales, especially to ride the London to Brighton.
We will.
And we'll be joining thousands of other people. Really fun social ride to the coast for a great cause. And if you would like to be part of the massive peloton of cyclists, you can get £5 off the entry fee by going to bhf.org.uk/L2B2019. That's bhf.org.uk/L2B2019. If you're not able to take part but you'd like to sponsor Team Cycling Podcast, you can go to justgiving.com/the-cycling-podcast. We've already raised quite a lot of money. We'd like to raise a lot more before we set off. A big team from the podcast going
on June 16th, isn't it? Yeah, big team. And you know, will you be able to train during the Giro for it?
Well, I'm carrying on with my morning runs, quite hilly run that I did this morning. So I feel like I'm going to be capable of tackling Ditchling Beacon, especially if we have a nice lunch stop before that.
So, Slavia, it's 10 past 12. Lionel's just ordered a cappuccino, but it's cold outside and it's wet. So there's kind of, there's like a grace period when it's a bit colder, isn't there? Mm. You can drink cappuccino slightly later, correct?
For me personally, it's correct, but I'm relatively young compared to the average age of the population in Italy, so I bet that the majority of the people in this country would be a bit more conservative on this issue.
You're also from Rome, you're Romana,
si.
Born and bred,
si.
Romana doc, as they say in Italy. How is coffee culture in Rome different from the rest of Italy?
I don't know, Rome is always like this this sort of middle universe and parallel universe, because we're not in the north and not in the south, so we're kind of average and standard in compared to the others. The biggest difference, I think, is that if you go in the south, they will drink water before coffee, before an espresso, and we actually kind of don't. And that's always a big shock when we don't ask a glass of water.
Nice cappuccino. It's very, you know, very frothy, warm. No chocolate on the top.
I got asked here yesterday whether I wanted cacao on the top, which was the first time I think I've ever been asked in Italy.
I've been asked all the time, actually. It's quite average, honestly.
No, I don't think in the north.
Bah. I don't know, but why do you go to the north, Daniel? Come to the south.
Well, Napalm, that was us in Frascati this morning before the start, grabbing a coffee. I think I was talking rubbish, to be honest. I think my theory about cacao or chocolate only going on cappuccino in the south, I think it's nonsense. I mean, I do have quite strong feelings about the fact you shouldn't have anything on a cappuccino, but I think people do all over Italy. It's not just a north-south thing.
Well, that was us in the cafe with Flavia Cappellini, who's here working for InCycle. You know, she's Italian. She should know
she's
about
Roman.
Coffee. Yeah, exactly. So she should know about Roman coffee culture.
And Roman cuisine. She probably knows about that as well. How good was the meal we had last night in Frascati?
It was excellent. And you stitched me up a bit with a photograph of me sitting at one end of the table with
really?
All of the starter plates in front
of
us.
I didn't. I spared you because little did I know that our waiter had not finished bringing the antipasti at the time that I took the photo, and there was about 2 minutes later a big tagliere, a big chopping board of mortadella and various meats and all sorts of other things arrived.
It was really good and extremely varied, wasn't it? There was a kind of a ragu sauce which had a real spice to it, a chili spice in it, and you don't necessarily...
It was Eritrean.
That was Eritrean, was it? Right, yeah. And it was a really an excellent meal. And we were remarking on how a consistently good quality the food is. Now, that photo, you know, I actually went on Twitter to just basically say it was fake news. That wasn't all my dinner. And, well, you may remember in last night's episode, we brought the reaction from Mikel Landa following the crash. He was not happy with Simon Yates, and there was some further fallout from that, wasn't there? Landa, well, he didn't deny he said it, but what did he say?
He said it was taken out of context. Mm.
And Simon Yates just said, oh, that's fine. They, you know, we all say things. Very magnanimous about
it,
really.
And quite humorously as well, because there was a nod there to Simon Yates' comments before the Giro, which caused a bit of a storm. The comments everyone knows, they're a bit scatological. I'm not going to go into it.
Yeah, well, I just, why don't, you know, it doesn't have to all flare up into a great controversy every time somebody says something a little bit spiky, does it? It's you know, it's a combative sport in many ways. Anyway, that's all calmed down a bit now. What? So, yes, we were going to hear a little bit from the last man standing today, Louis Verwecke, a Belgian rider with Team Sunweb. He obviously was out in front, compensating in his way for Tom Dumoulin's departure from the race, and he had a very wet day out.
For the whole team, was a big disappointment yesterday to see him in such a bad shape, and then this morning was pretty clear already that it would be a hard case for Tom to finish the stage. And then I heard directly he stopped the race, and then I said, yeah, come, we try and we attack, and we you never know with the rain, especially if you have a good breakaway, you get a little gap how far you get, but how far you go. But I think that's the motivation of the team now, is try to win the stage. Yeah.
You used to be a tennis player. In tennis, you wouldn't have to play in these conditions. What was it like out there?
And the breakaway is quite okay because you push all the time and you don't get really cold. But I spoke at the end a little bit with the riders of the bunch, and they had really, really cold. It was on the limit, actually. Now and then there was really a lot of water on the roads and make it pretty dangerous. But it's part of the job, I think. Yeah.
Louis Verwecke didn't really play ball there with my question. Quite pleased that I learned that he was a very promising tennis player, but rather than sort of volley the ball nicely back over the net to me, just sort of whacked it past me, didn't answer the question at all, really. But he was freezing cold and very, very wet, and I think, you know, the riders were keen to get on with the business of getting warm and dry.
It was a rotten day, Lionel. It was a rotten morning. There weren't too many riders out and about talking to journalists this morning. One person I did speak to was the Jumbo-Visma direct sportif, Adi Engels. I was curious about the finish yesterday. It looked like an opportunity for Primoz Roglic to follow Richard Carapaz, gain some time. He didn't do that. I wondered why.
Just a question about the finale yesterday, Adi. Maybe you were misjudging things, but it looked as though Primoz, well, he perhaps could have followed Carapaz, or he's looked strong enough in the last few days to be able to follow Carapaz. So what happened in the last 2 kilometers?
Well, to be honest, I think that's a really good question for Primoz. I didn't have any coverage, I didn't see it. He said he felt good when we spoke afterwards. I think at that moment, yeah, he could have followed or maybe closed the gap to Carapaz, but I think we know our main goal at that moment. I think we were for sure, and I think also Primoz was really relieved that he had passed the big crash, and he was sitting where he was. So for him, I think that was that was like more important than also to do still a move for the stage. I know what you mean, and what's the balance?
Yeah,
I don't know. To be honest, we only know, and maybe we don't even know in the end. But yeah. you never know what. What's the reason for example, like last year with Yates, is it 100% obvious that it's because of his riding in the first 2 weeks? I don't know. It's also nice to to have a lead like he had last year, and for sure Primoz, if he can also in the first part, if he feels like he can increase his lead, I think he should do it. You never know what's about to come. Looking to that, I think it's really important when you look to the complete team, how you use them. Everybody looks to the leader, but you need the team. For example, if you make a plan every day to gain a few seconds, but you need to sacrifice every day your team, then I think you for sure you pay in the end. That's what we try to avoid. We try to be there in the good moments, and then in the finals everybody has to push. And I don't think that's going to make a big difference.
And just last thing, is Laurens de Plus okay? He lost a lot of time in a couple of stages. Was he just resting? Is he healthy?
No, he's okay.
Yeah.
He's okay. Yeah.
He's not sick.
No, he's not sick. Okay. No, he's not sick. I mean, it's not really on purpose that he just lets go. I mean, it's always easier to sit in the bunch. But he's for sure he's not sick. He's just not having the super legs. And also then it's more wise to not try to find the super legs by forcing every day. So try to keep him as calm as possible. And luckily so far the stages don't ask for his support.
Daniel, you're becoming more and more convinced that Roglic might lose the jersey or at least let it out on loan tomorrow by allowing a breakaway to go. I mean, we haven't seen a great lot of evidence of Jumbo-Visma defending the jersey in the conventional sense. They haven't needed to because the sprinters' teams have done the most of the legwork on the front. But if a break goes away and gets a lot of time, you'd have to imagine they wouldn't waste their time and energy chasing it back tomorrow.
No, and tomorrow's a perfect opportunity to do it. The stage to San Giovanni Rotondo in the north of Puglia. Napalm, I'm sure you're going to enjoy it tomorrow because San Giovanni Rotondo is going to be awash with like religious tat and trinkets because it's the city associated with Padre Pio. Yes. But talking of sacred objects, sacred garments, I think the pink jersey is going to go out on loan from Primoz Roglic. In fact, I asked him tonight whether they would take the opportunity tomorrow if it presented itself to give the pink jersey away, and he seemed to suggest that they would, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and you can understand why, really. I mean, they don't need to do anything at the moment, and especially with the time trial to San Marino on Sunday, really it's the GC race kind of can operate on a separate sort of level to the race for the pink jersey at the moment. So yeah, well, let's see. I mean, that will make tomorrow's stage a really keenly contested one in terms of getting into the break, because you could imagine it being quite a big break, so 8 to 10 riders.
Do you reckon Gianni Savio will have a rider in there?
I think Gianni Savio will have a rider in there, but the thing is, it will need a bit more probably than just the wildcard teams to be in there. It will need a bit of horsepower from the World Tour as well, people who could, because it's a long day as well. It's 230 plus again kilometres. Actually, it may be the longest stage of the race, 239. I haven't got the road book in front of me. It's probably wet, the road book now. Daniel to the rescue there with a mini road book. Yes, 238 kilometres tomorrow, the second longest stage of the race.
It's just astounding how long some of the stages have been this week. So we've had a 205, a 220, a 235, a 238. Well, tomorrow's a 238, and we will have a 239 to Pesaro on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it? And in order for the break to go to the finish, they will have to have some strong riders in there because it's lumpy as well. It goes all the way across Italy. Not quite coast to coast, but not far off it, is it? It's almost a sort of Tirreno Adriatico in one fell swoop.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you, as ever, to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. They're offering everyone 25% off their entire range of products from scienceinsport.com. If you don't know, that's energy bars, energy gels, and powders that you can mix up into energy drinks and recovery drinks, of course. And if you enter the code SISCP25 when you check out, you'll get 25% off your order. So if you're riding a sportive soon, or going on a training camp, or just doing some long rides or some short rides, that's the website for you, scienceinsport.com. Now, Daniel, the stage winner today, Pascal Ackermann of Bora Hansgrohe, came into the press conference, looked pretty well wrapped up, but obviously been hanging around probably an hour and a quarter since crossing the line, with all the podium presentation and dope control and then media on the finish line and then coming to the press room. And for a young rider riding his first Grand Tour, I was quite surprised that he kind of laid down the law. All right, it wasn't a huge gathering of media in the press conference, but he said, just 3 questions, please, which I can understand because of the cold. But when the third question from our colleague Andrew Hood from Velo News was about the doping investigation that has centred on Austria and has claimed...
Austria and Germany. I mean, let's not forget, it's a German doctor, Dr. Schmidt, who was operating mainly out of the eastern side of Germany. And Bora Hansgrohe, so Ackermann's team, is based in the kind of southeast of Germany.
Well, the question was, do you have any comment, and what does this say about modern cycling, from Andy Hood?
And
is it a topic of conversation in the peloton?
That's right. And, well, Pascal Ackermann said sort of off mic, can we have a proper question?
A real question?
A real question, that's it. And when off asked if he wanted to answer it, he said no. And that was a third question.
And he got up and left.
He got up and left. Now, it's a funny one, this, because, you know, I don't want to get too much into the sort of the dynamics, press conference dynamics, but what did you make of that sort of reaction from a young rider who's riding his first Grand
Tour?
Well,
and a young German rider, and I think that's significant because most of us remember that sort of 7, 8, 9 years ago, the German riders and German teams were sort of bombarded with doping scandals, and they were bombarded with doping questions. And that was at a time when T-Mobile had fallen apart due to a doping scandal. Gerolsteiner went the same way, and Germany was losing races and so forth and so on. And there was a generation of riders who, you know, they really had to be spokespeople for their sport, and they were constantly asked about it. And the legacy of that has been a generation of riders like John Degenkolb, Marcel Kittel, who are very impressive generally when they're asked about that particular topic. So I kind of thought that it was now something that was in the DNA of German riders to speak and speak openly about that topic. So I was quite surprised, and I was quite disappointed, really.
And also, I guess, to anticipate that it's coming and understand the history of the sport didn't just stop, you know, 2 years ago or a year ago or whatever. It's a constant line, isn't it? And it really isn't that long ago that things were clearly going on, because this investigation centres on 2012 and 13, doesn't it? And really kind of really...
Well, it does, although if you look at the UCI communique, so today the UCI published a press release, and they suspended four individuals. So one was Borat Bozic, who's the director sportif of Bahrain Merida. Another one was Christian Corrin, who was at the Giro, Slovenian rider who rides for Bahrain Merida. Durasek of the UAE Emirates team. And the fourth one was Alessandro Petacchi, who's here as a pundit.
Well, Alessandro Petacchi's been retired a number of years now and is part of the team for the national Italian broadcaster Rai, and well, I gather he was on air after the stage had finished, denying any involvement in this.
Yeah, and we were talking about the chronology of this and the timing. So Durasek was the only one from 2017. The others were from the same time frame, around 2012. Petacchi has denied it now in multiple places to multiple journalists. Whether he's back resuming normal duties for Rai tomorrow, I don't know. I'm fairly doubtful about that. In the meantime, Corrin went home this morning. The Bahrain Merida rider Nibali's lost a domestique, quite a key domestique in Corrin. And one individual who's particularly disappointed, Lionel Paolo Slongo, was the coach at Liquigas when Corrin was there, now the coach at Bahrain Merida. I spoke to him this morning outside the Bahrain Merida bus.
E siamo rimasti un po' stupiti perché queste cose qua non dovrebbero succedere.
We were shocked because this kind of thing shouldn't happen, but it was also in the past. We're talking about 5, 6, 7 years ago. All we can do is accept it and carry on with one rider less in the team. As for Corrin, he's a relaxed guy and he seemed relaxed even yesterday. No one would ever have imagined this was coming. And by this I mean that it's an ongoing investigation, so I can't even accuse him without him having the chance to defend himself. As I said, we're a man down and we'll be even more united, because when things like this happen, you look into each other's eyes and say, guys, we have to give even more now. Corrin's a ruler, so he couldn't have helped Vincenzo on the climbs, but we would have used him on a day like today. We'll just have to be even more motivated to cover Vincenzo. This morning the doctor spoke to Corrin. I just said goodbye. He denied everything, but then the team told him that there was a UCI press release and he couldn't start. We then booked him a flight to Trieste. I don't know exactly where he lives, but it's near the Italian border with Slovenia.
Well, riders denying their involvement in a doping situation like this is nothing new, of course, but there does seem to be a sort of groundswell of things going on, doesn't there? You know, this kind of all kicked off again with Danilo Hondo, former teammate, I think, of Petacchi's on the Gerolsteiner team.
At the time, in the period in question.
Yeah, and of course, last year, Bahrain Merida's Belarusian rider Siutsu tested positive for EPO. Yesterday,
UAE Team Emirates pulled Milano, a Colombian rider, out of their Giro d'Italia roster. So it seems to be kind of centering on riders who are in those two teams at the moment. But of course, you know, the indications are that this is something from some years back.
The teams that these riders are currently or have been representing is pretty incidental. What is unclear is how this network came to be. Mark Schmidt, the doctor at the center of this investigation, first worked in professional cycling in German teams at Gerolsteiner, at Milram, but there's an assortment of nationalities involved. Milano is a separate case. We don't even know if that's got anything to do with doping whatsoever.
True.
But... you know, we've talked a lot in the last couple of years about this kind of ambiguity at the moment about what's going on as far as doping's concerned. If anything's going on, how clean is the peloton? You know, a bit of light is being shed by this particular investigation. We don't think there are any more big names to come out. That's certainly what I've heard. There might be some recently retired riders like Pataki, but
do you not think, because of the profile of the riders that have been named so far, there's a kind of a, and the fact that the point has been made that this refers to a few years ago, and the fact that Pataki is retired and so on, there's an opportunity here for cycling to kind of shrug its shoulders and say, it's historic, or it's not big names or what have you. But I think you're right, it kind of, you know, in order to see what's going on, in order to see the full picture, you have to open the door a little bit and let the light in and carry on looking, basically.
And it is a strange mix of riders. I mean, back in the really dark days, you could form a good picture, a sort of hierarchical picture, and based on, you know, if a guy was sort of in the top five on GC in the Tour de France and he tested positive, then you could maybe make a decent assumption about what the other members of the top five were doing. But, you know, this is it's a very motley assortment of riders, notably a couple of sprinters in there. I mean, Bozic is a sprinter. Then you've got climbers like Pridler and Denifil, but then Corrin is a mountain domestique. Durasek is kind of a breakaway specialist. Then you've got Hondo and Pataki, again, two sprinters.
Yeah, well, we will watch what happens over the coming days. Other riders who are out of the Giro for completely separate reasons, just update on Danny Navarro of Katusha, because we saw several Katusha riders go down yesterday, and Danny Navarro really came off very badly. Three broken ribs, a broken collarbone, and a perforated lung from yesterday's crash. Really serious injuries. Jelle Vanander, less serious injuries, but not feeling good. I think got a knee problem, I think, for Lotto Soudal, so he is out as well. So this weather and the crashes are beginning to sort of take their toll, and let's hope the weather improves tomorrow, and at least we can dry out a bit.
Let's hope so, Lionel. What are we going to eat tonight?
Well, I don't know, because we've got a little bit of a transfer.
We're heading into the Apennines, aren't we?
Yeah, so what will
not
be
a
on
region,
the menu?
Not a region I particularly know that well. We're going to still be in Lazio. I was sort of poo-pooed Roman and Lazio's cuisine a few days ago, but we had a good example of a typical Roman dish last night. We had tonarelli, cacio e pepe. So tonarelli is another, there are millions of names in Italy for different types of spaghetti or similar things to spaghetti.
It kind of sort of shoelaces rather than sort of fine donkey's hair, or yeah, you know, it, so it was a little bit fatter, and it was with walnuts, truffles, and it had a real kick as well, didn't it?
Yeah, and
that was the pepper,
and cheese and pepper. Yeah,
very nice indeed. And well, it felt a bit like that whole spread of antipasti was almost the whole of Italy converging on Rome, which as its capital, maybe that's it doesn't have a single defining cuisine of its own, but it draws influence from north and south. But we will see. We've got quite a long drive this evening. The Giro's kind of making its way across the country before it heads back up virtually to Bologna again, where it started on Saturday in the coming days. Before we go, just to say, on Monday, on the rest day, we will be doing our press conference. Please send us some questions, any questions you have about the Giro. You can record a voice message on your phone and send it to our WhatsApp number using WhatsApp. The number is +44 797 133 8205, and the number is in our Twitter biography as well, which is @cycling_podcast. I think there was something else that I had to mention, but I can't remember it now. My notes have got slightly wet. So on that note, I think, Daniel, we should get on the road.
Let's go.
staccano, si sciolgono, staccano, si sciolgono.